Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Got a fantastic person on the line today, which is Joshua Price of suspensionexperts.com. He's an Amazon suspensions expert, as the name implies, and also an Amazon strategy consultant and a very bright guy altogether, very good person to talk to about your Amazon business. So Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So a bit of background about you first would be the boring but probably essential first question, so I better ask it.
Just tell me a bit about yourself.
Let's redo that. So Joshua, just give us a little bit of background, a bit of a flavor about yourself and your involvement with Amazon over the last few years.
Sure. Well, I've been working with Amazon for about 6 years, doing appeals for the last sort of four, nearly 5 years now. Over that time, I've helped a lot of sellers with their suspensions. It's the thing I'm probably best known for. But I've also been working with some sellers behind the scenes on, you know, growing their sales and managing their accounts as well.
So I know we're going to touch on both things, and this episode is all about suspensions, and we'll talk about your insights from helping people grow their accounts later as well. So first of all, let's talk about suspensions. Not a fun topic, but a really essential one, especially for the more serious sellers. The first question is, what are the risks? What can happen, and how bad is it?
It can be pretty bad. There's a lot of people being suspended every day. It's not just people who are doing things that are intrinsically bad. It's not people, you know, sellers who are all badly intentioned. Lots of perfectly normal sellers of all sort of size are running into trouble on a, you know, a daily basis, from my experience. And also not just full accounts, but various other aspects. Different, you know, blocked products, for example, probably plagues a lot of sellers, even if you've never been suspended.
Okay, so blocked products and suspensions of products. So what are the, what's the sort of size of the problem? I mean, what sort of percentage of sellers would you say? I mean, this is a kind of how long is a piece of string question, I realize, but just to try and dig a bit further into the question of how likely is it that somebody's likely to face a suspension in the course of their Amazon selling career?
I'd say it's highly likely. Obviously, I only tend to speak to sellers when they are suspended, but in my experience with sellers outside of this work, almost everyone has experienced a suspension, especially as you're starting out in those first few years, and when you experience rapid growth or a sudden drive in sales, you know, during a Christmas period or something, then suspension's pretty much inevitable. If you're going to fail those metrics, it's going to happen.
Okay, right. So it's something we're going to have to come to terms with, the possibility of happening, and have ways of dealing with it. So what's the downside then? How long do people tend to get? Well, first of all, let's quantify what we mean by suspension. I guess that you've implied already, okay, there's two types. There's account suspension and there's listing suspension. Presumably, you find that listing suspension is a lot more common than account suspension. What can you speak to you about the sort of numbers in that regard, or the percentages?
Yeah, I don't know any real facts or data for that. I deal with both on a regular basis. It often depends on a bunch of factors as how common as a listing suspension will be for you as a seller. They're definitely more prevalent to receive an issue with a listing. And Amazon generally block a listing before they'll be suspending your entire account. If, you know, a listing is the sort of cause of it, rather than take you down for one product, they'll block the product and then you'll have to appeal that separately. So I'd be surprised if there's sellers who have been selling for a few years and haven't experienced it, at least on one ASIN.
Yeah, that does make sense. And yes, I think that's
I've definitely experienced the odd listing suspension, but not experienced account suspension. I know lots of people that experience the listing suspensions pretty frequently if they have a lot of products. So yeah, that ties in with what I understand from my selling friends and my own experience. But also, I guess in your case, as you say, you have a sort of darkened view of the world in that people come to you when they have a suspension. So in a way, I guess it's a bit like asking a doctor what percentage of people have diseases. I guess all they see is the people with the illness. So what is the downside of getting suspended then? How long does it last? How is it always permanent, or is it reversible? This is the sort of dumb basic questions, but we got to ask them just to make sure we give people informed before we delve into the detail.
Yeah, and it's not actually that dumb. Amazon really don't make things particularly clear, so it's no surprise if you're going to misunderstand these sort of things. Suspensions can last for any amount of time, really. It could be permanent, you're never going to ever get reinstated, or it could be a short-term thing and you're back up in a day or so. The downsides really is about your money being held. That's a big issue for sellers. So as most sellers know, you get your disbursement, your payment every 2 weeks. And if you get suspended, then Amazon stop dispersing to you. They hold the money. And so if you just got paid out, then you probably not got very much money in the account. But if you were about to, when you got suspended, Amazon could be holding tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of your pounds or dollars or euros. And so, you know, that's a pretty big thing, especially if you're struggling with your cash flow anyway, to experience that. And then Amazon will give you the money back after 90 days, deducting things like A to Z claims and refunds, assuming that, you know, you've got a suspension type that allows that. There are some situations where actually they will hold your money indefinitely. And so that's a pretty scary prospect for a lot of sellers, that you could literally tomorrow have your money not coming to you and it's stuck in their bank account and not yours.
Wow, that is quite a major downside. So we're going to have to look into that. And I'm glad I asked the question, actually, because it certainly brought stuff out that I didn't know. I didn't know that it was possible for them to hold your own money indefinitely. I didn't also know that it would generally come out after 90 days. So we'll look into that a bit more when we come to the specific types then. So what are the risk factors, the main things that will possibly cause account suspension?
Sure. We normally break it down into three categories. While Amazon doesn't explicitly say these are their categories or whatever, it seems to fit that form quite a lot. The first being performance, which is probably most normal for sellers. They'll have experienced these sort of things in the past. And this is about the account health and the metrics. So your order defect rate. So it's about your A to Z claims, your negative feedbacks, and your chargeback claims. Things like late dispatch rates, cancellation rates, refund rates, those type of things. Things that you generally can control and are to do with your shipping performance or your customer service in some way. And Amazon are clear about what the guidelines are. They set you numbers and you can monitor them quite easily inside of your account. Second is policy suspensions. So it's kind of a bit of a broad term, but essentially there's over 100 pages of Amazon rules, guidelines, and policies, as well as all the legal stuff that you have to comply with each country you're selling in. And if you were to break any of those rules in any way, then Amazon would suspend you. We call it a policy suspension. Typical of those is something like an inauthentic items, you know, some counterfeit products, or an intellectual property dispute where the rights owner of a trademark, for example, is contacting Amazon saying you're infringing. You know, could include a lot of nitty gritty details as well. Detail pages, that's your product listings, could have an issue. You could be misusing the way, you know, variations are created. It's a broad topic. Third and finally is the stuff you don't want to ever get involved with, which is either related account issues or things like fraud and manipulation of the Amazon system, essentially gaming the system in some way. So black hat techniques and lots of pretty bad things that you don't want to get involved with.
So let's just deal briefly with that then, because it sounds like it's going to be the shortest conversation. So the third kind of related accounts, what are related accounts?
Sure. So Amazon's policy allows you to only have one account and operate one account if you're a business owner. And if you have a genuine reason to have another account, such as you run two completely separate businesses that do completely separate things, then you have to request that from Amazon and get permission for it. If you're to open an account and you don't have permission, then Amazon can link them together. Even if you try to avoid that happening, they've got quite complex and pretty good systems, to be honest, at finding these things. And then they'll suspend either the new account you've created or potentially suspend both of your accounts.
So pretty grim business. Yeah, and it's fairly obvious. I know there are people that do black hat techniques that you know, run multiple accounts on Amazon, and you have to be, if you're going to, you know, break the law, I guess it's the 11th commandment, don't get found, right? And as you say, if you open a new account, Amazon's quite likely to be able to link that to you. And one thing I think people forget about with Amazon is if you are, you know, wanting to indulge in activities that bend or even break the law, then the law has to prove beyond reasonable doubt. That's the criminal kind of level of proof that is just required. In a civil court, it's the balance of probabilities. But in Amazon's case, it's just whatever the algorithm says is quite likely to be correlated. It may be completely wrong, but it doesn't really matter. So I would caution anyone that it's not about them proving that you're wrong. It's almost like the other way around, right? So you got to prove that you're innocent. So I would say that not only should you not be breaking the rules, you shouldn't do things that look like they are breaking the rules, because it's a pretty tough environment. Have you got anything to say on that before we plunge into the policy violation fun?
Well, you're completely right. And actually, you know, to give some pretty up-to-date information for your listeners, in the last 2 weeks, I've seen a huge increase in suspensions for this type of thing to do with conduct and manipulation of search rankings and these type of things. So Amazon are clearly clamping down on it a lot more. Potentially, they've designed some new algorithms to find sellers. And I'm seeing people who are sort of in a very much gray area with things they're doing. Things that I would have said if they'd asked me were probably within policy, yet they're being suspended for them because they appear to Amazon to look a bit like abuse or to be slightly questionable, and they're just coming down with a really sort of iron fist on the issue. So if you're even close to that sort of that gray area at the moment, I'd really suggest you kind of, you know, pull off the gas and take a break from it.
That's very useful advice. Thank you very much. I mean, that might be saving a lot of people a hell of a lot of grief really. They do seem to go through waves with this stuff. I mean, let's talk about that before we get into the detail, but would you say that that's true? Do they go through waves? And is it safe to say when is a sort of less harsh time and now is a harsher time, or is it just always hard to predict anyway?
It definitely appears that they go through waves. I think in reality, they don't particularly. The thing is, they're always evolving and they're always changing. And there are millions upon millions of sellers. And so when you see, you know, a few of your friends maybe experiencing similar issues, you can say, oh, well, there's clearly something going on at the moment. And, you know, it's easy for me to do the same. The reality is there's so many sellers, it's impossible for us to see a trend, really, given the quantity. However, Amazon are always going to be iterating and designing new ways of finding sellers and protecting their customers. And so when something like that gets rolled out and you get a fresh way of them doing something, then there's, you know, obviously an increase in people getting caught for things. But also there's times when Amazon, for some reason, that's on a sort of like slightly bigger scale, are going to pick up on things. So if it's maybe they have a, you know, something public that becomes an issue, they're going to clamp down there. A few years ago, there was a big sort of public issue with them for people selling counterfeit goods. And suddenly, you know, they're becoming really strict on it. And if a brand complains about something that's happening on the platform, then of course, they're going to be stricter towards that brand. We saw that with Apple a few years ago.
Okay, that makes sense. So the counterfeit goods, a few years ago, there was the review manipulation in sort of October a couple of years ago, isn't it? I guess it's October 2016-ish now, really, if I remember rightly, but quite a while ago. Yeah, it sounds like they may be going through a wave. I mean, the thing is that we've talked, and I just wanted to sort of quantify the risk, because I think, you know, as risk reward judgments are at the heart of good business decision making, and if the downside is that they could hold onto your money forever, then my question is it worth even, you know, the gray hat stuff if that gets you a little bit ahead of the game temporarily? And I guess that's a judgment everyone's got to make, but it's useful to have that kind of combination of people are getting suspended for gray hat stuff, however likely it is, even if it's like, you know, 0.1%. But a 1.1% of losing a several million dollar a year business and getting the cash tied up permanently is pretty grim kind of, you know, payoff, right? So that's interesting. I mean, it's something everyone's got to weigh up for themselves. I can't possibly be making that decision for anybody listening, but useful to get some more input into that decision. So tell us about policy violations, because obviously that you talked about the really black hat stuff, then you mentioned performance. We'll come to that in a second, but what about the policy violations things? What does that consist of?
So most common of those will be inauthentic items. If you've not had a listing block for this, or at least some invoices requested while they review your listing, you're pretty lucky. You know, something that's inauthentic, it doesn't mean that it has to be exclusively counterfeit, but it's in that type of realm. And Amazon decide to review these things in a few different ways, from my understanding. Either someone's complained about you as a seller, And of course, then they're going to investigate into it. But it could also be that somebody's been complaining just generally about the ASIN, or the company themselves, that the manufacturer, have complained about the ASIN. And so then Amazon are going to initiate a review of it. And of course, if you get caught for one thing, Amazon are going to check all your other listings. So just selling, you know, thinking get away with it with one thing, it's going to backfire on everything else.
That's a good point. And I guess it's sort of linked with everything else in Amazon, that everything in Amazon's linked. If you're doing something in the UK, they're going to check what you're doing in the US. If you're doing something in one account, they're going to check another entirely what you think of a separate Amazon account. So yeah, everything tends to spread. And I guess it's similar with anything else, right? If you start giving the law reasons, like in school, if you give a teacher a reason to kind of investigate one thing about you, they tend to put you under the magnifying glass. So best avoid is. All right, so that's one thing. What are the other common...
Michael, sorry, I will just correct you, actually, on what you said there, because it might be an interesting point. You compare the UK and the US and how they might check you in one and the other. Amazon actually operates as completely separate companies from the North American side of things, which is Canada, the US and Mexico, and Europe, which is the UK, Italy, Germany, France and Spain. And then they have a sort of Asian and Eurasian department for all those other marketplaces. And the teams are separate. The databases seem almost completely separate. In the years and years I've been doing this, I've seen very few instances where a problem in one of those, say, European countries has caused an issue for them in the US. They might have happened to run into the same issue at the same time, especially if it's a performance issue, which we'll get to in a moment. But actually, they do operate very differently. So if you're experiencing issues with a product in the US, for example, maybe you've had a intellectual property complaint, then that doesn't mean that necessarily your product is not okay to sell in the UK, because intellectual property law is different depending on which country you're in. But also, if you get caught for doing something in the US and you have stock left, one of the best things you can do is to get that stock out of FBA, if that's where it is, or if you're just selling it in merchant fulfilled, and start selling it on the other marketplaces as quickly as possible. Because if Amazon are going to happen to review those things, then you want to, you know, get it sold before they do.
Okay, so basically, if they've suspended listings in a particular marketplace and you don't think you can get them reinstated, you need to get the stock out quickly before they consider suspending the whole account. Is that basically what you're saying?
It's a good way of solving your problem.
Yeah.
Just because they've blocked it in the US doesn't mean that you're not allowed to sell it in the UK, or that Amazon are about to come and check your UK account.
Okay.
So you'd be better to, you know, sell it there if you have those accounts, that's the way you operate, rather than sort of just throw in the hat and not sell anything at all.
Okay, yeah, that's good advice. I mean, what's interesting is from your perspective, which is where you do have more sort of overview than most people, because you get people coming to you with suspensions all the time. So after 4 years of doing that daily, then you're going to see those patterns. So if you see it very, very few patterns for things transferring across from, say, European Amazon to US or the other way, or indeed North America, then that's interesting. So they are more separated than I thought, actually. That is interesting. All right, that's again worth knowing. That's a bit of good news, actually. So what are the other kinds of policy violations that people will end up suffering or being accused of?
Wow, I mean, there's like I said, over 100 pages of policy, so it really can be quite lengthy.
What are the common ones? Let me just say, yeah, what the ones that you find coming across your desk?
Aside from intellectual property and inauthentic, the few that are quite common is either selling some sort of prohibited items, listing in the wrong categories.
Yeah. What about intellectual property complaints? You were mentioning those. They seem to come up quite a bit. Are they very common? And what's the trend with that? Is it getting more common?
I don't know if it's getting any more common, but it's certainly a pretty common thing to happen. A lot of sellers are going to run into issues. It's a complex part of product sourcing and selling things. And if you don't understand it, it's kind of likely you're going to run into issues. But also, some sellers have products that are obviously going to be more likely to run into those issues than others. For example, if you were to sell a sort of t-shirts that you custom printed with designs, unless you're doing those designs yourself, you're probably going to be running into a lot of intellectual property issues. But even products that you have purchased from Alibaba, maybe, they may have patents on them, or the brand that you've decided you want to use has got a trademark on it in the US, but didn't in the UK. And so you just didn't know about it until you started selling it over there. So unless you're doing your homework beforehand, it's pretty easy to run into those type of issues.
Yeah, this is sadly true. I mean, I've come into this myself. One thing to say is that a so-called generic product from China, I mean, there's not really any such thing. I mean, products don't grow on trees. They're not like sort of weeds or something. They're actually designed by humans. So somebody somewhere quite often owns the patent, although there are such things with, as, you know, nobody's claimed the patent and nobody's about to, but I think that assumption can be really risky. I've certainly had to give up selling products and with, you know, quite a substantial number of units left, like a few hundred or something. What are the other things? Tell me a little bit more about listing things in the wrong category, because that actually seems to be something that people actually almost actively pursue these days as a way to get themselves better BSR. Is that a, sort of seen by Amazon as a pretty serious offense?
I think it depends on the scale at which you're doing it. You know, depending on how you list your product, it's obviously if you are using Seller Central to create your listings by just clicking on and sort of adding a product singularly, then you can't do it. You don't have control. But if you're using flat file uploads, then you get to download the template and select the browser node, which is the category, the code for the category. And then you could be listing pretty much anything in any other category. And obviously, there were some perks to being in certain categories. You're going to get different opportunities for variations. You're going to get different amounts of people searching for your product, and it may list differently or rank differently in the search results. But it's ultimately going to cause you some problems if Amazon spot it, and especially if you have a lot of products in the wrong category. The odd one here or there, you're not really going to get in trouble for it. Amazon may send you an email and say, we've changed the product category, but you're probably not going to get in trouble because it's going to look like just a mistake, which does happen. It's quite complicated when you create these listings with these files. But if you're doing it on quite a big scale, then I wouldn't be surprised if you were to run into some problems at some point in the future.
Okay, so it's like a lot of things, don't take the mick on the big scale, really. Yeah, that makes sense as well. So scale is obviously kind of increases risks of anything, really. What are the other sort of complaints? What about safety? Is that something that comes up frequently? Because I guess it's one of the scary things that when you're first starting out as Amazon, yours, imagine somebody cutting themselves or something harmful with their products and suing you into oblivion. Is safety actually something that causes a lot of suspensions, or is that quite a rare thing?
It's relatively rare for it to cause a suspension, but it could get your product blocked, which is quite common. Customers like to complain. It's just the reality of it. Regardless of whether your product is actually at fault or not, if you sell enough of them, someone's going to do something stupid with it or hurt themselves with it or make a complaint about it. And so Amazon will block the listing and, you know, start an investigation. And you've got to provide information to prove that it's safe to use. And sometimes that's quite easy because it's the type of product. But if you are in one of those categories where there's loads of legislation, something like children's toys, or in medicines or supplements, then you know you need to get tests from laboratories and endless labeling and all these type of things. So if you don't have that when Amazon asks, you're a bit stuck, really. It's a very difficult situation.
Okay, and is that a safety issue, or is that sort of about breaking certification and regulations and things like that? Or does Amazon lump them all together?
Amazon would present it as a safety issue because while they could trigger that separately, it's unlikely they will realize there's something wrong because they don't request you to provide this information when you create the listing. The only way is if a customer complains. So imagine you're selling some medicine for children that is your own brand. It's a pretty risky product to be selling. And if someone complains, oh, my child, you know, was vomiting after taking this, even if the product has nothing to do with that and you don't think it could have caused that, Amazon are going to obviously ask you for documentation to prove that your product is safe and has been tested in all these sort of ways. If you don't have that information and that documentation, then you're really screwed.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things that I'm more and more likely, you know, I'm more and more pushing people who are new to the space to consider, which is that just because you don't get blocked by Amazon from listing a product now doesn't mean it can't come and bite you in the behind down the line if you don't have a certification. So, you know, do your homework before you're sending something. So I've got a client who's putting some organic kind of beauty type products up, and I said to her, look, go and do your homework. I'm not a specialist in this space, but if you need to go and check what the latest regulations are about this, then make sure you do. And if you need any certification, let's get that, because that's not a block to you putting it on Amazon, but it could be a reason that Amazon will take you down in flames if you need it and you don't have it. So it's like something you've got to have in your back pocket as a sort of insurance policy, right? That's my understanding.
Yeah, completely. And you're not just taking the risk based on your current situation. You could, like your client there, you could sell that product for a year, you could run out of stock, you could decide you're going to discontinue it and you're going to do something else, maybe move to an entirely new category. But a year down the line, your business could be significantly more successful, you could have staff and teams, and then Amazon could be investigating that product that you sold a year ago and haven't sold since. And you could be suspended for it if you weren't able to provide the documentation. So it's not just, oh, well, I'm not selling anything now, so I can afford to take that risk. If you want a career and a sustainable business on Amazon, then you need to be not taking those risks at any point.
Okay, so you can even get suspended a year or so after you've finished selling a product, potentially.
You could do. It's not hugely common, but I've definitely seen it.
Yeah, and I guess the thing is, why take the risk? And I suppose the answer is because it takes a bit more homework and maybe a bit of money. But yeah, as you say, it all comes down to digging better foundations if you're trying to build a serious business. And I guess the more Amazon develops, the more you have to be grown up, right? That's an overall sort of trend that comes up from several different angles, whether you're looking for the sourcing, account suspension, prevention, marketing, everything just needs to be a little bit, you know, more professional really these days. So let's talk about the metrics side of things. So we talked about policy violations and then the other kind of crazy things like having multiple accounts. What about the metric related suspensions? How does that work?
So as you may have seen, if you're a seller who's been around for a while, Amazon have changed the way that we display the metrics and information. You used to have an account health page, one really long page with absolutely tons of numbers in it, whereas now you have the account health dashboard, which is quite nicely displayed. You've got three columns and you can see a bunch of different numbers and statistics about your selling activity. So metric stuff's all about the customer experience. So that might be the late shipment rate, for example. So once a customer places an order, unless you've overridden the default, you have 48 hours to dispatch it. And if you don't do that, then you're going to get a ding on this issue. And if you get more than 4% of those, you're highly likely to get suspended. Same for order defect rate, probably something that most sellers are going to get suspended for at some point, especially if you sell products with high complaint rates or you sell into markets where the shipping system isn't quite as good. It's the, you know, your order defect rate is your A to Z claims, your negative feedback, and your chargeback claims. Chargeback claims aren't very common on Amazon, but people open A to Z claims a lot. They get a refund, Amazon decides a claim, sort of similar to the system people might be familiar with PayPal and eBay issues. And yeah, negative feedbacks is on your seller page, not on the product reviews, but the seller feedbacks to about your service. And if you ship stuff late, it arrives damaged, those type of things. Customers are going to leave reviews and you're going to get, run into problems with your auto defect rate. And the reason that people do run into problems is because the target is 1%, which compared to any other platform is incredibly slim. It doesn't allow for much error. And if you're not selling products at huge quantities, maybe you have, you know, higher value individual items, you know, you're just really difficult. You get one complaint and you could be over the 1%.
So do they take account of the fact that obviously a very small sample size doesn't give reliable statistics? Because I mean, I have had, for example, I can't remember what it was. I think we set something up for shipping, it was FBM shipping in order to test the system that a listing was working. We ended up with, I think, 7 late shipments out of a total of sort of 10 sales in a matter of a week, which kind of looked ridiculous, but they didn't suspend it over it because it was clear that it was a sort of aberration. Is that normally how they look at it, or do they just take it as a raw percentage and there's no common sense applied?
No, there's definitely other factors in the algorithm when they decide whether to suspend you for it. And I think one of those will definitely be the account's history and, you know, if you've struggled with this before. And also how long it's been going on for. If there's this sudden jump and then everything returns to normal afterwards, they're going to look at that and say, well, they've probably resolved the problem themselves. We don't need to suspend them for it and bring this out. Whereas if for the last 6 months you've been really teetering on the edge of going over and then you pop over, there's probably some underlying ongoing issues and Amazon are going to bring those up.
Okay, yeah. So there's a certain amount of common sense, which is, as you say, been teaching on the edge for 6 months, then that it's kind of been borderline for a while. That's going to go differently.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.